I don't have a fun voice picked out for today's episode, but I am really excited about this one. We are going to have a blast talking to Elizabeth Burns. She is a doula, and she's really just a new parent mentor. That's actually the name of her brand, too.
You know, we want to kind of tackle that whole first. I mean, it's like the fourth trimester slash like that first year.
Surviving the
baby.
First year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, you know, again, back to the Facebook group, you know, this is what you guys are asking about in the mm-hmm. Facebook group a lot. So we're she is a wealth of knowledge. She's actually going to be a part of the Facebook group. You'll see her answering some questions. And the good news is, too, if you really liked her style and what she's talking about, you can work with her. And we'll leave, you know, at the end of this episode, you'll be able to find out how you can get in touch with her.
Yeah. And I'll tell you guys, it's one of those things where you might feel like you don't need help, but you do.
We're so excited to chat with you.
Pumped.
Yeah. And so you are Anita Devlin's goddaughter.
Yes.
Cool. I love it. Keeping it in the fam.
Yeah.
Quite literally.
Anita Devlin, if you guys don't know, is the mom of our agent. It's like a whole, you know, we're all connected.
And I love Anita. I've had a couple phone calls with her. We were supposed to do a fun collab, but then COVID came and just shit on everything.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you're in New York, right?
I'm currently in Vermont. Okay. I'm doing the quarantine thing, living at your parents' house, you know, but leaving back to Brooklyn, yes, next weekend to return to whatever is left there.
I know. It's hard to say, like, return to what? Nobody knows.
I know. I'm not sure yet, but I've been doing all my clients like virtually, which is generally fine. So it's been pretty luxurious to be up here in the summer instead of in the city. So
yeah, that makes sense.
Let's talk about what you do. What's your, I know you're a new parent mentor. Let's talk about what that is and then get into some fun chat.
So I have a teaching degree, which is great, but it wasn't exactly what I was looking for once I was actually doing it. I'm sure anybody who teaches feels the same way. They get the most out of the one-on-one connection with the family or the kids, and the rest of the politics is just like a lot. And so you either deal with that or you don't. So I decided to jump into nannying first and jump into newborn care right out of college, and got a postpartum doula training. And I have a training as a new parent educator. And there wasn't exactly a certification or a training for something that I was believing to be the, like, that I wanted to make exist. So my hope was to sort of help parents through the first year, because there are so many questions to be asked. There are so many unsolicited opinions that you get. And generally what I do is work with parents to take a holistic view of what they want out of their first year of parenting and what they want out of, like, either the first 12 weeks or the first year or toddlerhood, and make decisions from there instead of like them Googling ferociously on like parent forums or parent blogs.
I think we've all done some Googling.
You can get into a deep hole.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So basically if there's an issue, we go through it. And sometimes that means what to expect from the postpartum period. Sometimes that means help with potty training. Sometimes that's deciding what to put on your baby registry because your friend told you to get this big, beautiful thing, but you live in a little New York apartment. So it's basically boiling down the decision-making a little bit and making a team of two parents and a person to help them along, and then sort of setting them up for success so that they feel confident in their decision-making going forward. It's very individual. Like, it's different with every single client that I have.
So what would you consider, what is your title? What do you call yourself?
My business is the New Parent Mentor, but I would say New Parent Consultant. I have several titles under my belt, but that's my general go-to. Lately, it's been a lot of sleep because parents are home all day with their kids. So it's a lot of sleep consulting, and it's a lot of play help, like parents trying to figure out like what to do with their kid all day, basically, mm-hmm. while they're working. But when I was in New York, it was a lot of helping people find nannies or like helping people decide what they want out of someone who's working in their home or something like that. It's very dependent on the times, dependent on the location. And now it didn't occur to me to virtually consult when I was living in New York, because there are so many babies and so many parents. But now that I'm here, I have clients in Chicago and San Francisco, which is great. It's a good time to learn, learning on the job.
I love it. I love it. So I guess we really wanted to tackle survival of the first year. And I feel like, you know, I actually just finished the first year.
I know.
My little baby is no longer a little baby. She just became a toddler. But, you know, it's my second time around. And I always think about, like, the first time around, how much of a nightmare it felt like. You know, I loved my baby. It was, you know, it's like such a joyous moment. But you have all these moments of, like, I went through a lot of anxiety, like postpartum anxiety and stuff. And I didn't know, you know, I think I felt a lot of, like, I was scared of, you know, like, if I leave and I'm breastfeeding, who's going to feed my baby, like that kind of stuff. And obviously, the one thing that always stands out to me is, like, no one really emphasizes how bad the lack of sleep is when you are in that first, especially the first, like, month, and you're like, ah. So I'm sure there are so many, like, tips that you have to give to people when they have a baby for the first time, right?
And also, you posted in the fam Facebook group, and you got a lot of response about people being curious about how to sort of sleep train or sleep questions, right?
Yeah.
So let's tackle sleep first. I think we lump it up.
Yeah, like if there's one thing that I think is, like, the worst thing that you go through as a new parent is the lack of sleep.
So bad.
I think the hardest part that everyone that comes to me says is that, like, nobody told me that it was going to be like this. Like, they talk about how much you're going to love your baby. And if you have a tough birthing experience, they're like, oh, but you have a healthy baby. And meanwhile, you're like a zombie. And you're like, but what about me too? Like, me also.
Yeah.
So most of what I do is the helping the team of the family versus just the baby on one specific issue. It's like, okay, if you want to breastfeed, that's great. But also you need sleep, I think.
That's
also a priority. So yeah, let's talk about sleep a little bit. We can also talk about the postpartum period, like that fourth trimester. Unfortunately, the sleep is the hardest thing.
Like, there's no easy way around it, right?
Yeah, like it's the sleep, like, leads hard to all the other terrible things that you feel.
Right. So there are ways of setting yourself up for success, basically, in that first 3 months that you have going on. So why we call it the fourth trimester is because humans are the only mammals that they really need that, like, cozy womb-like place to grow in that first 3 months versus, like, you see a video of a giraffe being born and they just, like, walk away.
It's crazy.
You know, like, we don't have that. So there's a lot of baby carrying. There's a lot of, like, cozy snuggles. There's a lot of, like, feeding on demand. And I hesitate to recommend something so broad, like scheduling or, like, putting a baby in a crib immediately, because parents have such different styles. So if you want to follow all the AAP standards, then that means baby's in your room, in a bassinet, like, all following all the regulations. But a lot of my clients are not following every single AAP regulation because it's not
realistic. Yeah.
Yeah.
To do that.
Yep.
And so my job is to go based off of what they're looking for and go from there. But I would say my typical client is someone who just, like, wants sleep, especially now, wants sleep and wants some semblance of routine for their baby, even if they're brand new, just because it helps. If you're a working parent and you have a baby home, or if you're on maternity leave and you have a baby home and you have another working parent in the home, it's nice to have some routine in your day to, like, keep your brain moving versus just, like, doing something on demand. So I think we'll talk about, ideally, we want our babies to fall asleep independently. That's, like, the dream goal.
And that when you say independently, you mean, like, without a binky in their mouth and just, what do you mean when you say independently?
Eventually, yes. Yeah. I think when they're really little, it just means, like, you put them down a little bit awake, like drowsy but awake. It means they don't have a feed to sleep association, or they're not.
They don't need you holding them.
Yeah. Or, like, you're holding them, like, they're in a crib or a bassinet. Pacifiers are fine. AAP loves a pacifier because they have been shown to reduce SIDS risk.
Mm-hmm.
Those are fine. But yeah, it really just means, like, you can put your baby down and walk away while they're sleeping. So they're in a safe place where you can do that and get yourself, like, a glass of water or something like that. So the AAP recommends rooming in for the first 6 to 12 months, which is not necessarily realistic for a lot of people. In New York, it's mostly common because there's either one room, or if they have a second kid, the other kid is in that room. So the baby ends up in the math, like in the bedroom anyway. But ideally what we're looking for right off the bat in that first 3 months is setting up a circadian rhythm for your baby. So a lot of times people are like, oh, my baby's waking up every 45 minutes in the night and then they sleep all day. It's like, they're a little bit mixed up. Like they can get their day and night flipped very easily that when they're that little. So if you bring them into the light and you have them nap in the living room versus in the bedroom, that's what we want to look for. But if you're struggling with like a 3 month old or a 5 month old who is not the best sleeper, I think the place to start is creating a physical sleep environment that is ideal. So that means dark and a little bit noisy with a noise machine if you have one, a swaddle or a sleep sack. And then I always tell my clients, if you're starting to sleep train, you want to bridge the difficulty. So if you are breastfeeding your baby to sleep every night, our first step is to pull them off and put them in the crib. That's like as far as they can get. But if you have a baby that sometimes wakes up because the passy falls out and you immediately go put the passy back in, they're just going to keep waking up. So to bridge the difficulty, that would mean maybe putting your hand on their chest or shushing them a little bit to see if something else that's a little bit less of an intervention would work. Mm. That's like the gentlest form of sleep training. Of course, there are much more intense versions and it's totally family dependent. And I have supported clients through all kinds, but if it's something where you're like looking for just a gentle way or a way to start, the first thing to do would be to trust that your baby also wants to be sleeping. Like your baby wants.
I feel like some moms would be like, my baby does not want to sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, that's fine. But if you keep giving your baby the passy or you keep breastfeeding your baby to sleep, they're just going to keep getting used to that. Another thing to do is to set up like bed and nap time routines. So by 8 to 12 weeks, babies have pretty good pattern. Like they can recognize patterns pretty easily. So if you do bath, book, bottle, bed every night, eventually in their brain, those neurons are firing and those synapses are getting stronger and stronger, that after a week or 2 weeks of doing that, as soon as they get in the bath, they like get in the zone. People get a little bit wary about, we don't want to get our baby on too much of a schedule. We want to be like cool going out. And like that was like before times, but even now, in my opinion, if you set up a bedtime routine or a nap time routine, you can really go anywhere. Like a lot of people right now are traveling homes or are like taking vacations in Airbnbs or hotels. And if you have the same small, maybe 20 minute bedtime routine, you can do it anywhere and it will make your kid feel comfortable wherever you are, no matter if it's a bed, a pack and play or whatever. Because if you just start from nothing and you're like, go in, put the baby in, like turn the lights off and leave, they're going to be like, if you change locations, they'll get stressed. Kids get stressed a little bit faster than we do, but they're also pretty adaptable. So if you keep a few things in their routine, it makes it easier to move around.
It sounds, I guess, easy when you hear it from a professional like you. And then you start to actually go through it and you're like, oh, shit, like this is, and you almost get frustrated, right? Like I remember my pediatrician, both babies, like you need to like right away just start trying to put your baby down like after you feed them. And I used to be like, okay, that sounds like, yeah, like that makes a lot of sense. And then you do it. Yeah. And then you're like, yeah, that doesn't actually ever work out like that. So what are your tips for parents that are that feel that, because, you know, like they'll read something or they'll hear from a professional like you, but then it's hard to actually put it into play.
Definitely. So a lot of parenting advice is long-term parenting advice. And a lot of parenting in practice is short-term fixes, which is survival. Like that's just what your day-to-day is, especially if you have no sleep. So the first step is to A, cut yourself some slack, and B, you have to start small. Like you just have to, maybe your baby sleeps on you for every nap during the day. So maybe you put them down for one nap. Like I'm not in the business of strict, intense, rigid schedules because babies are not robots. They're just people, you know? So if you go into it with the idea that it's going to be a flexible routine, and you have some guidelines like, oh, if the baby's doing this, I know what to do next. So like, I know that if I've put the hand on the chest and I've like shushed and she's still crying, I can put the passy in, like no biggie, but I tried the other two things. So it's just giving your baby the chance to try,
right?
To trust the fact that maybe 1 out of 10 times the first day it will work, because a lot of the times it doesn't work, or you're too stressed and you don't want to do it. And that's the problem with a lot of sleep training, is people are like, yeah, we can do extinction, which is the method where you put them in their room at 7 p.m. and you open the door at 7 a.m. and you just let it ride. But if you pick that and you have a heavy feeling in your gut that it's not a good idea, you're not going to be consistent about it. And the only thing that works with all long-term parenting advice, so whether that's picky eating, whether that's sleeping, whether that's behavior, is consistency. So if you go in and you pick a plan, or you work with someone who has a plan that's like way too, like in your mind, you're like, yeah, we can do this, but it sounds a little bit scary. You have to be honest with yourself, and you have to be on a team with your partner. Because what a lot of people do for sleep training is like the intermittent checks. So they'll like go in at 2 minutes and then 5 minutes, and then, which is great. But if you pick, you're like, okay, the first time we're going to do 15 minutes. And then you go in at 5, it's like, okay, you already set yourself for failure. So start with 5, you know, just cut yourself some slack. And if you have a gut feeling, you have to listen to it, because it's not gonna work in the long term if you aren't committed, basically.
This episode of FAM is brought to you by OxiClean. Do I look clean today? Do I look OxiClean?
You look really clean. You know, I just looked down at my shirt and I realized that I have food all over myself, which, aww, I don't know how that happened, but that's what you get when you have kids. And luckily, I have OxiClean to work its magic and remove the stains later.
You guys, this is such a versatile product. We've talked about it before. There's over 101 cleaning uses. It's not just for laundry. Nope. Let me give you an example. Mm-hmm. You can clean your bathroom, tile, and grout, which is, you know, woman's dream.
Well, I love getting in there and cleaning the grout. But what I love actually is that it just makes it easy. I mean, I think people hear, you know, like stain fighting and cleaning and all of that kind of stuff, and they think this is going to take a long time, but we don't have time for that. You need something like OxiClean that's just going to clean it quickly.
With OxiClean, you can actually save items that you thought might have been ruined. Don't throw them away. Clean up. Try OxiClean. And you guys, you can try OxiClean Versatile Stain Remover for yourself by going to OxiClean.com/try me, T-R-Y-M-E, and order a free sample. That's OxiClean.com/try me. Get your free stain fighting sample while supplies last. If your kid is like, let's say, 1, and they just never really were a good sleeper, is it too late to do some, like, to implement these methods at 1, or what do you suggest for kids that are like a little bit older?
It's a great question. And a lot of people are like, okay, lost cause, you know, but most of this sleep training applies to 1-year-olds, because the harder, it's a different section of sleep training is like 3-year-olds, toddlers, when they're in a big kid bed. But if your kid is 1 and they're in a crib, all these methods still apply. So a nighttime routine, maybe if they're walking around, or if they're more verbal or they're more active, you can include them in the nighttime routine where you have like photos of it, similar to what they would do at like a daycare or a preschool. But really all of these things apply. So if you have a 1-year-old who you have to rock to sleep, or who won't take longer than a 45-minute nap ever, you can start a plan. So bedtime routine is a great place to start. Or if you have a new sibling in the mix, it often will throw things off for the toddler. And so you sort of have to start over with sleep training, like every new sibling, every new big life event, because things just get like, it's not the priority anymore a lot of times. And their brains change a lot. So at 1-year-old, they're generally taking 1 to 2 naps a day. So you have to think about, okay, what does our schedule allow for if they're going to school, or if they're going to daycare, what do they want us to do? But I think bedtime and nap time routine, I think a lot of people who have early wakers around that age by changing the physical sleep environment can get a lot, can get like an instant change. So like they make it darker, they put on a little bit of noise, and they set up a like a bedtime routine. Often you can get like at least another hour or two in the mornings because they're set up for success versus like light peeking in at 5:30 and they're like, okay, here I am, ready for the day.
I think the thing to remember with sleep is that at some point in that first year, especially, or maybe even in the second year, your baby is going to make you feel like a zombie, right? I think that's the thing to really 100%. Point out to everybody. Because I've definitely heard people be like, oh, the first like 6 weeks, they're like, baby's a great sleeper. And then they get hit with it at some point. Like maybe the baby turns 4 months old and they go through that first sleep regression.
Or they start teething at like 9 months and they're waking up in pain and it just feels, they feel like a failure.
Yeah.
It's funny talking about sleep training. Like I've actually in the last, I don't know, few months, maybe year, I've started, and this is going to sound funny, I've sort of started setting up a sleep routine for myself so that I can have really, because I want to be treated like a baby. But in all honesty, though, it's true. Like we dim the lights. We don't have overhead lighting in our house after a certain point. I don't look at my screen. I'm really strict about screens and nighttime for the most part. We really try and wind down and so that I can have better sleep because I feel like I had sleep trauma from waking up so much that even when my kids were sleeping like little rocks, which they do, knock on wood, now at 3 and 6, I was still waking up at like 3, just like, ugh! Giving somebody a tit, you know, just like
your brain got rewired to
it
do
did.
That.
And
it takes a long way to come back.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, if adults, if you think about sleep as being like such a huge priority and part of your life, you know, as an adult and thinking about the importance of getting your kids to sleep, I don't know. I think just having more of a focus on the importance of sleep is a good thing. And getting in routine. I've never been somebody who's good with routine. That's why my kids didn't sleep for a few years.
This routine has changed my life. We
well, and especially adding another one,
the second
you
one.
Know, when you work and then you need a routine. With Cyrus, I tried to have a routine, but with Idris, I was like those parents you referenced in the beginning of like, no, we're cool. We're just going to like go to Paris.
I listened to your sleep training videos, you guys on YouTube, and you guys, obviously you had different plans going in and all like, for me, great. All of them work. If you don't feel like you have an issue, you don't need to fix it. A lot of parents are like, oh, my mom said we should potty train. I'm like, do you feel worried about potty training? No, then don't do it. You know, like, we get all this stuff on Instagram and we get texts from our family and they're like, oh, well, have you thought about this? And it's like, I have to sit down with people and be like, what do you actually want out of this? Do you like when they crawl into your bed or is it annoying? Like, do you know?
There was a secret part of me that liked my toddler getting into bed with us at night.
That.
Yeah. And cuddling and everything. Okay. Wait, so we've talked a lot about sleep. Let's touch on some of the other things that people experience in that fourth trimester and within that first year.
Yeah. So the fourth trimester, even before coronavirus, was extremely isolating. You know, your first, in the US, your first postpartum visit is at 6 weeks and everyone is very focused on the baby, which is great. But after training as a postpartum doula, we have such a lack of care for the birthing parent.
Yeah.
So the best way to set yourself up for success as the birthing parent and with a partner, we usually do like pre-birth, prenatal sessions, but is to find as much help as you can, get their numbers, get their information, find out what they're going to volunteer for. This is usually the partner role. Figure out, like, are you actually going to come over or would you just rather like drop off dinner? Because the worst thing is when people are like, oh, I would love to come help. And then they flake.
Or I think a lot of people don't know how to help. I think people want to help, but they don't know what to do.
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah. And just think, a lot of parents, like, I know that in my family, we're big like hosters and big entertainers. And so a lot of parents feel obligated when family comes over to like put food out and like look nice. And it's like, try your best to bring in only those who are actually helpers. Right now there's a company called Freedom Mom, which I'm sure you guys have heard of through what you guys
actually
are doing.
But
it's the same company, I think, as Free to Baby. And they create like a postpartum package that you order to your home or you order to the, and you bring to the hospital. And it has like mesh underwear, a sitz bath, like all these really amazing products
that
you get like sort of okay ones from the hospital, but these are like the ones. So to find something like that or to buy extra mesh underwear from CVS or buy everything that you need so that you're set up, especially now, like who knows what's going to happen in a couple of months. So to have those things at your home when you're already ready.
No, that's a great new mom gift.
It's an exactly. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing mom gift. They tell you like sleep when your baby sleeps and like do those sorts of like, there's a lot of unrealistic advice. So sleep when your baby sleeps and like enjoy it while you can. And it's like,
oh, those are the most infuriating things I heard. It's like sleep when your baby sleeps. It's like baby fell asleep. Finally, now I'm going to like go make myself coffee or maybe I'll pick something up. Like I'll actually like pick up around the house or I'll watch TV for the first time in like, you know, a couple of days. And yeah, it's like very infuriating to get that.
You, of course, like you gain a new identity as a mother and as a caregiver, but you lose, you're allowed to grieve the fact that you lost your previous identity. And sometimes you just want to like sit and watch Netflix because that's what felt comforting to you before.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think new mom support groups or new parent support groups are the number one thing I can recommend. They are now, a lot of them are virtual. You can find so many. From places. So like if you wanted to attend one in New York because your friend is also pregnant, like you can attend that one because it's on Zoom. But having people who get it, because your partner gets it, they're there, but if they're not breastfeeding or if they're not the birthing parent, it's a totally different thing. So to have that is huge. And then another great gift is postpartum doula hours. So like a lot of postpartum doulas will offer like a gift certificate and people can go in instead of like a big unnecessary shower gift. Like that's a great one.
Oh, I had
love that idea.
God, that's such a good idea.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. And like, even if it's just right now, a lot of postpartum doulas are doing virtual consulting, but even just to check in on, is this normal? Or like, should I be feeling this way? Or to tell the partner that these are the things to look out for that signal postpartum anxiety and here's what to do and here's when to contact your doctor.
I think the idea of gifting something like that that's genuinely helpful for a mom and dad or two sets of moms, whatever it is, mm-hmm. is such a great thing. Two of my friends got night nurses when they first had their babies because they were both like just very busy working moms and everybody needs sleep, but they're businesses would essentially crumble if they weren't like prepared when they walked in. And they both told me privately that that was one of the best things that they've ever spent money on. And I had a conversation with one of them and she was like, that should be the gift for the moms. If everybody goes in on that, what is better than sleep? You don't need all the onesies.
I think especially first time moms, myself included, you have this in your head that you can do this yourself and you should, you know, like I think that
like getting help means you're a bad mom or something, but we have to remember, you guys, we are community types of creatures.
Yes.
We were supposed to raise kids in a community of people and now we're so isolated in our houses separate from everybody and people aren't as friendly and helpful. And I don't know. I'm a big believer. And if somebody wants to get you some help, take it.
Yeah, it's hard. There's such a stigma of like, you bounced back or like she's really handling it or, you know, and it's like, that shouldn't be it's the same as like being like, oh, I'm good. I'm really busy. Like that shouldn't be like a qualifier of how well you're doing at a certain thing, is that you're busy or that you're tired. Like, oh, I'm so tired. But like, it's amazing. It's like, it can be you're tired and it's amazing. It doesn't have to be, but like, that's the hardest part. It's like, oh yeah, I had a traumatic birth experience or I had a really hard postpartum period, but like, thank God that like we have this perfect tiny addition. And it's like, it can be yes. And I always say it can be both. It can be really terrifying and really amazing. And it's going to oscillate between those two things every 15 seconds.
That's so true. 100%. Yeah.
You're crying for good things and for bad things every 15 seconds.
And sometimes they like start good and get bad in the same like tearful session.
Same moment. I know. Exactly.
I know. Okay. So let's hit like one other good one. What do you think? Food or what should we,
Well, what comes up a lot? So it's like the sleep, it's the like, what kind of
behavior.
Gift? Yes.
And independent play. That's the one thing you were talking about earlier.
I would love to talk. Yes. So like I said before, everything that you want to quote unquote fix or make good about childcare is long-term and it does well with consistency. So you guys had that amazing episode with the conscious parenting.
Yes. Yeah, Catherine.
Yeah, Catherine. And so she and I have similar approaches. There's an approach that's actually pretty big in LA called Rye. And it's like, there's this woman, Janet Lansbury. She wrote a book called No Bad Kids.
Oh, I love Janet. I follow her on Instagram.
Yeah. And she has a great podcast too.
Yeah. I DM my husband things from her all the time. And he's like, why are you sending this to me? And I'm like, hint, hint, bitch. let Janet tell you how to parent.
I'm not going to tell you. That's me. That's my job to tell you, because we generally treat kids as like, unfortunately, like they're second class citizens. It's like, they don't have like, We're the parents, they're the kids. This is how I was raised. Like, I'm the boss, you know. But their approach in RIE, which is like infant educare, so it's like basically treating kids with respect. Like, I know it's like a revolutionary idea, but treating them as a member of the team instead of that the world revolves around them. Right now, if you have one kid, it's really easy to be like, okay, whatever this kid needs, I will do. And I try to get parents to understand, like, they're a member of your team, they're a member of your family, and they have agency and opinions and needs and frustrations just like you do as a person, even from 4 or 6 months old, but especially like from 6 months on. And you can start with the like behavior. She calls it teaching because like people don't love the term discipline because it has like a negative connotation, but really you're acknowledging their emotions early. And instead, we do a lot of projecting as child care providers or as parents, in like, you don't want to turn the lights off because you think they'll be scared, or like if you had trauma growing up, you tend to try to avoid anything that relates to that trauma for your kid. And we have to remember every single day that they're not us, or like they're not, like, which is so hard.
Or even like the way our parents disciplined us, right? Like, we're like, I grew up fine. Like, I turned out fine is right, the thing.
And it's often like the opposite. It's like, oh, my parents like were so strict, so I want to be super attachment parenting style, which is fine. But generally when you talk to parents in the prenatal visit, I talk about goals for qualities to foster in their kids, and it's independence. So there's a way to be there for your kid, but not be on top of your kid at all times. And that starts with babyhood. So ideally that would involve a little bit of sign language communication, but honestly, if you don't want to use it, it's not necessary. But like things like help and things like more, you can start early with like 4 signs, and it makes a big difference. But honestly, it's sitting with your kid, but not necessarily like doing everything for them. It's sort of similar to Montessori, sort of similar to Waldorf. They're all sort of like respectful care ideologies that were invented by different people and have a few different touchstones. But say you're sitting with your baby who is 8 months old, they're sitting up playing with a ball and they roll it away. And your instinct is just get the ball and bring it back, which like you're helping them. But in the same way that in sleep, we want to bridge the difficulty, we want to do the same thing. So you want to talk them through every situation that you can. So you say, oh my gosh, your ball, which hopefully you've been using that word a lot if it's a toy they love. And you try to look where they're looking instead of looking at them. So look where they're looking and point at the ball and be like, ball, it rolled away. Do you need help? And you'd be surprised. They'll look back at you and like be excited because yes, that's exactly what they want. And they can understand a lot more than we think. I've been trying to doing some full-time infant care in the first year to do the exact things to help families like start solids or do behavior. And my hope is to one day like teach a class on this sort of thing, because it is miraculous in a lot of parents' eyes. Because if you didn't grow up around babies, or people just like are scared of babies because
they're scary.
Yeah.
They're scary as hell.
If you didn't grow up with a lot of babies around you and you have a baby all of a sudden, it's scary. I feel like my husband was, or I feel like even my dad didn't know what to do with babies when me and my brother and sister were little. But anyway, go ahead. Yeah. This is really juicy stuff.
No, it's great. That's exactly right. Like, people don't know how to act around kids. So if we go in treating them like humans, they'll feel respected and they'll have an easier time and they won't get as whiny. So for example, if you do that ball scenario, then they learn to ask for help when they actually need it. So if you're you can be sitting with them in the same room and they're playing with a toy, and if you see them struggle, you can help and tell them that you're helping, but you don't want to help them in every single situation. So again, like if your kid is starting to pull up and they're working really hard, but you've created a safe space of those like foam pads and you just like let them, and they see, or you see something that they're trying to reach for and they're 6 months and can sit up but can't crawl and they're frustrated, that's the time to help and intervene and let them know that that's what you're doing instead of just making their lives easier every step of the way. It's like, we want them to learn that if they ask for help, they'll get it, but they don't need to ask for help for every single thing. They don't need to whine and come into the room at every single moment if they can do it themselves. And so by doing this and by observing, but sensitively observing and knowing, like, you learn a little bit more as you do it, but sensitively observing so that you'll help them when they need it, so they know you're there. So that creates that secure attachment, but it doesn't create like an attachment that you can't break.
And also, independence gives you so much confidence. Totally. I mean, if you can do something on your own as a little kid, you just grow up to be, I think, a lot more confident.
Yeah.
And they're pumped. Like if your kid can all of a sudden reach it, because they'll try and try and try, and you watch them try and try and try. And if they get close to being too frustrated, that's when you help. But when they do it, another important thing to think about, and this is with the RISE stuff, but I've noticed it helps a lot, is to, you can congratulate them, say good job, but honestly, long-term success, this comes with potty training and all sorts of things, comes when the kids are intrinsically motivated. So if you say you did it, they feel proud of themselves, not good job, like mommy loves you or something. It's like, no, I love you all the time. And like, you're fine. And like, you're a member of this team. You should be proud that you did that because you worked really hard. Not like, great work. Like, applause is fun and learning it as a kid is exciting, but to give them praise that's empty ends up being like short-term success. And then they just start doing things to like get a rise out of you versus.
Right.
I think I'm guilty of that right now.
You did it.
Yeah.
You did it. That's going to be my takeaway lingo from this.
Of like, I'm proud of you to you should be proud of you because you did this or something like
you
that.
Did is it. A,
that's a, really good takeaway. Even for me, I have a, you know, 6 and 3.5 year old. So I think that's
especially really that age. Yeah. So like switching even just that one thing from good job to you did it can make a huge difference. And then you can say, what else can you do? How much farther can you build it to the top? Or, you know, and that gets them excited to go do something independently with age appropriate toys.
You know, the first couple of months of like self-quarantine, I feel like all rules went out the door. And then we had this realization that we had to like get back on schedules and, you know, like implement all of these things. And the independence thing is such a big deal. And in some ways I had no choice but to let her be independent and do like the whole parallel play thing, because it's
like a kid.
Yeah, it's like I've got a first child who's just going buck wild all over the place. I don't even know where he's at. If I'm like trying to watch her the whole time, I can't find him. Right. So it's, I think that independence thing really has become a very important thing to me.
Mm-hmm. And I think when you like in that exact situation, when you want to prevent, like oftentimes if you put your kid down because you're tired or you have another baby and there's jealousy involved or there's frustration, if you talk them through it, it can go such a long way. So there's like the Happiest Toddlers book and like all those toddler discipline books say the same thing. They're like, talk to your kid, like tell them what, so say like, I get that you're feeling sad, you're frustrated, you really want me to pick you up. And they'll be like, yeah, they just want to feel understood and heard. And then to say, I totally get that. You are feeling frustrated or sad because mommy can't hold you. And then redirect and say like, right now, that's the reality of the situation. And we can do something else together. We can sit on the floor. We can do this. But just to have them feel heard. And it's the same with babies. So like, oh, you can't reach it. Ugh, like so annoying. And can I help you with that and to do it? But just to talk them, they just want to feel included. Like they're people and they want to feel, it feels really frustrating to just have somebody put you down or tell you not right now. And then that sends them into a tantrum. Oftentimes with 2 year olds and 3 year olds, you can't prevent tantrums all the time ever, but
oh, I know
you can shorten them and you can prevent some of them just by letting them know that you hear what they're going through. Like acknowledging emotions is a huge part of toddler parenting and babies too.
Elizabeth, where can people connect with you? Instagram at the new mentor?
New parent mentor.
Okay.
And I also have a Facebook page, The New Parent Mentor, and my website is thenewparentmentor.com. And there they can like fill out a form and email me if there's something that they're, I have like plans that range from a 30-minute phone call for just troubleshooting to 2 weeks of full-on support for sleep consulting.
Fabulous.
She was awesome. I could have talked to her for like another couple of hours.
For sure. So yeah, connect with her and have a great day, guys.
Bye-bye.